You are going to love today's episode. Today, I welcome Malaika Darville to the show, who is an amazing priestess, shamaness, DJ, ecstatic dance facilitator, yogi, elder, and she's one of my dear friends and teachers as well. So in today's episode, we are talking about the rise of the feminine and the importance of balancing the energies of Shiva and Shakti, which we're going to tell you all about in this episode. We talk about ecstatic dance and the rise of festival and retreat culture, why it's gaining so much speed and importance for bringing healing to the individual and to our planet. We talk about indigenous wisdom and ways of relating to help stop the drama-trauma circle. We talk about elemental awakening, going with the flow, and why it's so important to step out of our daily routines and into a sense of timelessness to remember our true nature. So I hope you love what Malaika and I are sharing here. She's so amazing. Check her out. So without further ado, welcoming Malaika. Welcome to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. It is truly an honor today to welcome Malaika Darville to the program. Malaika has been walking the shamanic path for a lifetime. She is known across the globe for her ability to reconnect individuals with their inner body spirituality. She's traveled and lived with indigenous cultures in Australia, Sri Lanka, all over Africa, Portugal, the list goes on. She's also taught at the world's leading events like Burning Man, Symbiosis, Woodford Folk Festival, Ibiza Tantra Festival, Bali Spirit Festival, Boom, and numerous private events. Her accreditations are through the roof. She's an Ishta yoga teacher, a qualified water dance practitioner, African dancer, and what I know her so well as is a five elements dance activator and as a ceremonialist. I've had the pleasure of being in ceremonies of 500 people, big cacao ceremonies with 500 people, where Malaika has just brought an entire room of people to tears and bliss. Malaika, it is such a joy to have you here.
Thank you, Francie. It's such an honor to be here and to speak with you.
So tell us, what is your world? What are your offerings in the world right now?
So more and more I'm finding that, I think that life is a little bit like you have a basket and you go around and you gather things and you're placing all these different things in your basket. And at different times in my life, those different things that I've gathered, I've used them. And at this time right now, a lot of the women's work that I have been doing, specifically with womb activation and womb work, feels like it's at the forefront, is what people want and women want in particular. And so I've been finding that I've been giving a lot of private sessions at the moment, a lot of womb activation. I'm just about to go and teach a 2-week elemental yoga embodiment retreat in Sri Lanka. And we use the dance and the movement. And when I come back to Bali, I'll be doing some more five elements dance activation and also doing a lot of the Shiva Shakti ceremonies, because I'm feeling like what's needed in the world is this healing the wounds between the masculine and the feminine, both within and in our world.
Awesome. So we're hearing a lot about the rise of the feminine, and can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's true, the feminine is rising, but I think that what we need to do is not separate that the feminine is just women. The feminine is a principle that has been pretty much squashed and eliminated from our overly saturated yang world that we have, which is leading to burnout both for men and for women. And what's happening is the energy, you can't have a boat with one oar. You're just going to go round and spiral down into the abyss, and that's pretty much what we've been doing, paddling with one oar, which has been the over-domineering mind and a distortion of the masculine, of us achievement and push and go, which is the third chakra, and we're pushing and pushing and destroying everything at the cost of the earth. And suddenly now, when we're almost at this brink of destroying all of the ecosystems of the earth, we're all having the wake-up call of what's missing, the second ore, which is the feminine ore. So if we see the yin and yang, there's, you know, the black and the white, they're in perfectly balance, and there's a dot of each in each, a dot of the white in the black, and a dot of the black in the white. So the balance, you know, in order, we're in a universe that has these two balancing forces. So when we say Shiva and Shakti, and, you know, we have these distortions of thinking, oh, Shiva, we're talking about men. But women have Shiva principle. The principle of that is to be focused, to be aware, to be the sacred witness to what's going on inside our body. These are principles of the universe that were explained through humanizing concepts for the human mind to understand these huge, broad concepts. So Shakti is the moving life force principle. So when we look at the moving life force principle, when a man is playing his guitar and he's completely lost in the world of his music, that's Shakti that's ripping through his body. That is the Shakti energy. And so for so many men, they've had to use that life force energy to direct it into, you know, their only thing that they know to be powerful is to make more money. You know, that's what defines a man, is how much money he has. And then we're seeing the swing of that, where then men tend to go, oh, well, the only way I can get in touch with women nowadays, because they seem to hate men, is, you know, to be really feminine, and then maybe they'll love me, you know. So both men and women are suffering from, you know, this imbalance that we've created in our world. Whereas what we do want is, yes, extremely, you know, we need the warriors, we need the men to be so strong that they can hold a newborn baby in their arms. You know, it's like, that's the kind of strength that we need from the masculine. And from feminine, it's like, we've been through the feminist movement, we became like, we're just as good as men. We overdeveloped our inner masculine. Mm. And, you know, in doing so, we castrated the males of, like, they didn't have a place anymore. And so for all of us, it's kind of like needing to place that masculine energy where it belongs, which is behind us, protecting us, guiding us, and that we know that it's got our back. He's got our back, and we're leading with a feminine. So, you know, when women start to lead and they're leading with the masculine, it's, you know, that's the Margaret Thatchers of the world. You know, we're just doing the same old, same old. And so, but when women actually lead from what is the real feminine, it's, you know, women, we worked together, you know, as we didn't become a super species on the earth by individuation and, you know, competition and fighting. We became a super species on the world because of our ability to support each other, to love each other, to look after the children as, you know, hunter-gatherers on the planet. That's how we have come to being, like, overpopulating the whole planet. And now we've gone into this individuation to find ourselves, and now we're coming back again to going, okay, now how do we do this dance? How do we do this dance together where no men are not from Mars and women are from Venus? We're all from the same, you know, we're all Earth children. Mm. And we need to, you know, say that they're suffering and in pain just as much as women are suffering in pain. You know, when we look at what's happened in the history, you know, over this long course of history, we see that women, you know, being burnt at the stake as the witches or as the midwives and as the healers, and the men who were in support of the sacred feminine in nature, they too were burnt at the stake, and they too had their heads chopped off. And there's not really, you know, much given to that. So the seed of fear is in them too, that if they associate with that energy of, you know, the wild, untamed feminine energy, that it's freaking dangerous. There's a big fear that's been planted in there. So the, you know, follow the status quo of dominate and just pursue, you know, career and money and finance and all these things that are taking us farther and farther away from what is our true nature, what is our true calling and our true purpose in our hearts. So, you know, these ceremonies that I've been so gifted to receive, have literally received them. Like I dreamt them. I saw the ceremonies in dreams, and they are being gifted as a way to bring people back together again to heal. Mm. And, you know, and I see that, like I was saying at the beginning with this basket, you know, like using the philosophy from my Hawaiian bodywork training, which is so deep, and bringing that energy of that philosophy of Ho'oponopono, which is to put things into right relation, you know, put everything into right relation. So bringing that into then a Native American ceremony or a South American ceremony where I'm not just following the same practices of where that came from, but bringing the essence of what was ceremony for. It was to bring people together to heal. It was to bring people to, you know, go through initiation, which we don't have our initiation rites anymore. And this is where the masculine especially is suffering, because we lost our male initiation rites. For women, whether we like it or not, just by being in a female form, we go through initiation. You can't say, oh, no, I don't really want to grow these boobs and I don't really want to, start bleeding. It's like, well, too bad. You know, your body's going to do that, and you're going to go through an initiation into the feminine of like, wow, every 28 days. So we have these cycles that keep us more connected, but because of our, over-industrialized culture, you know, look at all the commercials for bleeding, you know. Get a tampon and plug it up, or get something to, you know, stop so that you can keep going in the masculine realm, instead of going, no, red you're tent. In a cycle. Yeah, the red tent, you stop. You need to stop. That's when women in the feminine were open vessels to receive the oracles. You know, they were the oracles receiving information from the ancestors and from the divine, and making their art and doing their weaving and resting their bodies. So all the symptoms that we're seeing in our society are literally can be resolved through us coming back and bringing these ancient ceremonies, which were a part of human history, in order to keep us balanced. Wow. And so when we see a world that's out of balance, it's because we've lost these very core needs of the human being, which are not being met anymore. Yeah. So even though our technology has advanced, 1,000-fold, our biology is not caught up to that. A baby still needs to be held and breastfed by its mother. We have not, you know, evolved past that. And when we deny all these, you know, simple basic things, a boy needs to be initiated into his manhood so he can move forward. And what is initiation? It's going from one point to the next point, you know, and the whole tribe and the whole people are there to witness this transformation.
Beautiful. And even just the way that you were saying how you received these ceremonies, not taking that ownership and egoic attachment to this thing that you are sharing, and you've essentially, that's been created through you, basically, is what you're saying. That's a very feminine principle of just receiving and letting go. It's not who you are. It's not yours. You're the vessel, and just allowing it to move through. So for those of you listeners who don't know, I actually have the privilege of living in a community usually about half the year here in Bali, and I have been for 8 years. And living in community has been such an answer for me, for, you know, they say that dysfunction thrives in solitude, and it's in community where we come together and really support one another and witness each other in our highs and in our lows, and, you know, it takes a village to raise a children, this sort of thing. And I'm wondering, you know, and I live there with Malaika, such an honor. And I'm just wondering what your vision of emergent culture is, and how community plays into that.
Well, I think that's why the rise in festivals has become so important, because when we are at a festival, you know, we are living in this tribal way that feels so much more natural and normal and healing to us, to get out of our little boxes and out of our, you know, time zones, and just coming together as a tribe, and we're all dancing in celebration. And we still, you know, people, you know, get triggered when they start moving the body and stuff might come up at a festival, but you're there with a lot of people, and you feel this support. So, I mean, definitely I see the rise in the festival culture as fulfilling the need that humans have to come together, because that's what we used to do, you know, with large groups of people, and then to go back off into smaller groups. And I think that if we're going to create a sustainable future, that people, you know, everybody's kind of holding the same vision and the same dream of, you know, as the economic situation starts collapsing in the world, it's like we're going to have to pool our resources together to survive again, you know, and not just survive. I feel like we've gone through the survival thing. We can thrive now. Mm. And what we're realizing is that we thrive best when we are in community. It's like, because that's what brings happiness to, you know, the small things in life, the hugs you share with somebody, you know, passing before breakfast, or the, you know, that little conversation we just had before this interview. And, you know, those are the moments that it's like, yes, I do belong, because part of our whole, you know, feeling like we don't belong on the earth is because we don't have this sense of belonging anymore to a group of people, or, you know, to something greater than ourselves. And I think the human condition, we really need that. Mm. You know, we really, really, really need that. And we long for that, and we look for that. And that's, you know, corporations, it's like you belong to the corporation, but the corporation being not a feeling body,
yeah,
it doesn't take into consideration this very basic human need for the need for connection, but it still provides this, I belong to IBM, or I belong to, mm-hmm, you know, to some big telecom cell corporation, you know, that I'm belonging to something. So it satisfies some very deep need that people have.
It's so interesting. I was speaking with a friend of mine just last week, and she just got this new job, and she really wanted to go to this festival, and she was feeling such guilt for taking time off of work and, you know, not being in that productive way, and not wanting to tell her family that she was going to do this thing that just comes off as maybe flippant or fun, or maybe even value free. You know, it was like, I really want to do this for myself because it's fun, but I feel guilty because I should be working, mm-hmm, or I should be doing, mm-hmm, what my family or friends, mm-hmm, think that I should be doing. Mm-hmm. But when you speak of it in terms of that tribal need for connection and belonging, it really puts a whole new spin, mm-hmm, on things.
Mm-hmm. And to go into the timelessness, you know, like when you're at a festival, it's like time doesn't exist anymore. You're sort of in a more spiral, circular time. Even people get to experience that. What does it mean to go with the flow? You know, like you people drop all of those needs of like, I have to be at this thing, I have to be here, and all the schedules that take us so far away from us feeling our own inner flow. But what as a festival provides, you know, and retreats, they, mm-hmm, provide this opportunity where you can go, wow, I really need to lay down right now. I'm going to just go lay in that hammock because it's just calling me. And, you know, we're all been pushed so hard, and people are so exhausted that they don't even realize they have this exhaustion. I mean, the retreat center that I'm going to in Sri Lanka now, you know, there's no electricity there. And we don't even, beautiful, realize how much electricity affects the human biofield. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when people walk through the gates, it's so incredibly beautiful. I mean, it's like in the jungle deeps in Sri Lanka, but the paths are swept, and even the way they sweep the path is art. Everything is art. And beautiful. There's no straight lines, which is easy on the human consciousness of this, you know, linear, everything linear. And suddenly you're in this like natural environment, and everyone comes in and they're all excited, and I can see their auric field, and it's like, wow, it's like a buzz, you know, like a, you know, yeah, like static electricity. And there's all these day beds and hammocks all over the place. So by day three, the human biofield starts to become activated, and people just collapse and they go to sleep, wow, for like days, you know, just recalibrating and coming into our own human biorhythms. And so, and it's so needed. So that's why, so like the rise of retreats, you know, to step outside of your everyday life where you can check in on a deeper level. I mean, some people, you know, when you talk to people, like, you know, people that are suicidal or in deep depression and things, sometimes, you know, it's a symptom of something that's been there that's so deep and festering, you know, from a very deep place. When the person gets to the stage of they're actually committing suicide, it's the result of some other very deep core issues that's been going on for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
So when you don't give yourself or allow yourself the time to just check out, you know? And I mean, I know in my life, I got the lesson very, very early on, and my body is my greatest teacher. And, you know, when I don't listen to those subtler sounds, those subtler little messages, then something bigger happens. So it's the same for all of us. You know, if we don't listen to those subtler sounds, because the last place that the universe communicates to us is the physical body. We have many, many, many bodies. You know, our etheric body is huge. And the universe will send us a message in the ethers in our etheric body. And if we don't learn to listen to those subtle bodies, if we don't even know that we have one, if we've never tuned in with that subtler, with so many distractions around that we can't hear the silence within and to listen to these subtler sounds, then, you know, it comes closer and closer. Then all these events start happening that you're like, why is this all happening to me? And then bam, you know, you end up with cancer, or you end up in a car accident, or you end up and you're like, wow, the universe was really telling me to slow down, and mm-hmm. I did not listen. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be the human condition that we need to be pushed to crisis point before we take action, instead of learning from other people's, you know, situations, to take that in for ourselves, to go, okay, we need to now take action and slow down and take the smaller messages, so you don't need the big, huge crisis point, you know. And it's a little bit like our environment right now. I mean, how far are we gonna get, you know, till there's not one turtle left in the sea before we stop, you know, manufacturing plastic? It's not just about recycling, it's about people rising up and protesting to our governments to make it illegal, just like other substances have been made illegal on the planet. We just need to make it illegal, you know, and that would just like solve a huge problem. We're all trying to look for answers of what to do, but it's like,
we
just
know.
Don't make it anymore, you know. It's like there is no solution, especially with third world countries. There is no solution with this problem with plastic. The only solution is stop making the shit.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's the same when we look at our own lives. It's like, what's not serving you, just stop. Point your boat in a different direction. That's not working. And sometimes to do that, it's so scary, because the system is set up that, yeah, you feel guilty taking a week out of your work life. What, you work, you know, 360 days a year, and you feel guilty for taking 5 days to yourself? Like, what is life? We've been duped into thinking that life is supposed to be a struggle and supposed to be horrible and hard, and then we're creating that because our thoughts and our minds are really powerful.
Yeah.
So what would happen if you think that life was meant to be abundant? What would happen if you think that life was meant to be joyful? What would happen if you think that life was meant to be full of love and full of connection, and if life was meant to be the beauty way? And then if you think that, it's like you start drawing that into yourself. So sometimes by just going on a retreat or stepping outside of time, going to a festival that draws you and calls you, and you see a whole new subculture of people that are living this way, it's like it's like the big shift happens internally of going, wow, I've been duped into thinking otherwise. And the machine wants us to think that, you know, just like they're pushing the agenda with artificial intelligence. No, hello. We, you know, only if we give our power away to the artificial intelligence is it smarter than us. That's pure stupidity. We are the highest, you know, we are the intelligence.
Ugh.
So we just have to tune in with that. I mean, when you think of a woman, when she's growing a baby inside of her, your mother doesn't think, you know, oh, where's Francie's eyes today? And where's, you know, today we're growing a liver and we're growing kidneys and, you know, this complex organism that mm-hmm. a human being is. The body, over millions of years of evolution, is incredibly intelligent, and we all have one. That's the gift of being a human being. So listen, learn to listen to that. And the only way that we get back to that is to start moving it. That's why dance is becoming such a popular pastime. Why ecstatic dance, five elements dance, yoga practices, anything that gets us back into our body, because that's where God and Goddess live.
Beautiful.
And then we can bring this harmony back of what the sacred union, where we're not needing something from the other, we're actually coming together. What can we co-create? What is this sacred union? What are we going to anchor on the planet together? Or we just keep the sacred union happening within ourselves and within our communities, and learn to get our needs met from many, not from just the, you know, this marriage institution, which they're all institutions. If we look at the history of humankind, it's like, you know, we don't need these institutions anymore. They were there and they served a purpose during a time of our evolution, and now we're evolving still, you know.
Yeah.
And even in school, we're taught as if we've evolved, and this is it. And now we have a 9-to-5 job and we have evolved and it's done. It's like, no, hello, people. We, you know, thank God, you know, this is not done. We are continually evolving. The only given in life is that, you know, change is inevitable. Wow. Struggle is an option.
I've been, everything that you just said, wow. I mean, we could talk for hours and hours on all of that.
But I gotta catch a plane.
I know you do. I've been teaching yoga recently, and the place where I've been teaching yoga has this cushion, and the cushion says, embrace change. And this has sort of been my mantra for the past, you know, few weeks as I'm just thinking ahead of Pure Flow and the direction that we're moving in. And what's really exciting to me about Pure Flow and the people that are coming is that there is this light bulb going off, this, wow, there really is more than in the 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what it is. Mm-hmm. I think it has something to do with yoga and this yoga word. And people are getting curious. Mm-hmm. People want to wake up. Mm-hmm. And people are coming on retreat and they're popping. They're having these fully life-changing experiences because for the first time, they're allowing themselves to turn off their phone for a few days. Mm-hmm. Or for the first time, they're just sitting in silence and watching the little voice in the head rather than just, you know, being in reaction or stress mode. And so I really do believe so much in the power of what you're sharing in these retreats and these festivals. And I guess one of the things, there's two things that you brought up that I want to address. One is integration. You know, we go to these retreats and these festivals and we have these peak experiences, these life-shifting experiences, these connected, heart-opening experiences. How do we keep that going? How do we bring that into our lives after?
I think, you know, morning practice is like super valuable to just, you know, seeking and finding ways to continually embodying what you learn when you go off on a festival. Yeah. And, you know, you've shifted your vibration. So when you go back, nothing feels right anymore because you've changed. You might go back to the same place, but you are not the same person anymore. So it's like that shifting of your own inner world and your own inner reality. And then, you know, learning to listen to the body and follow, you know, like there is this movement is happening globally. And so there is something everywhere, whether you're passionate about yoga or you're passionate about dance or you're passionate about gardening or you're passionate about you supporting children or your passion, whatever your passion is, that's your key. So you get switched on, you feel suddenly a new sense of passion. And that passion is like the seed in your own heart that's going to guide you to how you're going to birth your gifts. And so that's where then we take our stories because, you know, just we're all in the Earth University. And, you know, going to university is not easy and it's not without its challenges. So, but when we can see those challenges as gifts, you know, and everything is just like a lesson and something that we're learning from, that's the philosophy of Ho'oponopono. Ho'oponopono is the true meaning of it is like, there's two words, pilikia and pono. So pilikia is human trauma and drama, and we see plenty of that in the world. We just need to turn on the news and see what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And this is non-invitation of spirit. So the human trauma and drama, non-invitation of spirit. Pono, the same trauma and drama can be going on, but we invite spirit into the equation. So that then when something, you know, could be the worst thing possible is happening to you, but you turn it around and you see it from a higher perspective of a spiritual perspective of going, wow, this is the greatest thing that could ever happen for me, not to me. No one's a victim for me to evolve to the next level. So you go off, you have this experience at a retreat, at a festival, you come back to your life, you're like, oh my God, this does not fit anymore. I can't, you know, fit in here. And then that impetus, like the seed that's bursting, you know, the seeds, you know, I use seeds in my work all the time because I love gardening. I just planted a whole bunch of seeds this morning, you know, and a bunch of mangoes and durians and, you know, things that will be trees and fruit for the future generations because I love the metaphor of, you know, a seed has to go into the darkness. It has to go into the dark, moist compost of your of the earth. And that's the same as each one of us. We have to not be afraid to go into our shadows and start questioning, what am I doing here? Who am I?
Yeah.
You know, and don't try and answer the questions, but just keep asking that, you know, and know that all these institutions, school, you know, that they were created to control and manipulate us for someone else's agenda to make a lot of money, you know, and so they've done that. And there's, you know, they've set that up, and we've all just been part and parcel being guided yeah. like sheep in this, you know, herd mentality. And so to be a lion, you need to like step away and go, actually, I have a lioness inside of me, and I have direction, and start to find your inner direction,
yeah.
you know, and it will guide you. And it's scary, you know, but feel the fear and face it anyways and do it anyways. And that's the thing, is like when we turn fear, instead of it being something we're afraid of, so we do everything to avoid it, when we feel fear and we turn it into excitement, so we change the perception of like, wow, I feel really... And so in my work, I'm so about the body and feeling everything in the body, and I have to understand concepts through my body. So all of my life work, everything that I've studied and learned, I've put into practices that then I embody in the body, mm-hmm. and I go, oh, that's what it means to be a victim. You know, it feels like this. It feels all contracted and whatever. Oh, this is what expansion feels. I have to feel it in my body to understand what these concepts are. And I think a lot of people, I mean, we all have a body, right? So, you know, to feel things in the body helps us to develop an intelligence and an intelligent language around our sensations, rather than getting so caught on our mind, you know, because we're so stuck in our minds. We get back into the sensations, which are constantly changing. We're in a body that's constantly changing from day one till day that we take our last
Race
breath.
Change.
So we, you know, the more we can learn to flow with that and get excited about it and come into sensation, then the more we, you know, can rise up and
beautiful.
Yeah, feel more in harmony and trust that we're in a benevolent and loving universe. Because even the stories that we've been told through our great religions, I was thinking that today as I was planting the seeds, you know, and I was writing on the bag, today's day, 23rd of the 11th, 2018, and I just cracked up laughing. I was like, 2018, you know, get out of here. Like, this seed I'm holding, that's, you know, like coming from millions of years of evolution on the planet, you know. And it's like, so somewhere along the lines, when they erased our memory of how ancient we are and gave it a new date of 2000, you know, 2000 years ago, we started at zero again. Like, they erased our memory of who we truly are. We're so ancient. We have so much wisdom in our bodies.
Beautiful.
And that's, you know, when we tune into that, that's when we start to really awaken,
yeah,
you know. And
wow.
and to be fully aware that there's a huge agenda on the planet that does not, you know, benefit from people being awake. Because generally, when you're super awake, you don't need to go shopping and buy millions of things, because you know that external things are
complete.
Not going to make you happy. You buy what you need, you live abundantly, but you don't need to, you're not in this addictive state of
excess.
Nothing is making, I'm so dissatisfied with life, which is what the agenda has pushed, that I need all these external things to make me happy. So that, you know, when you are awake, it's like you're happy. You're just happy, you know, with everything. It doesn't even matter. And so you don't need, the need is gone. You can still use everything
yeah.
and have the most beautiful thing, but it's not a need. You're not, you know, like grasping and clinging to
that's
all
that.
That
hungry ghost thing
the hungry
we talk
ghost,
about. You know, just that and then I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Just that
oh,
relationship
maybe one
and then
more.
I'll be happy. Just that training and then I'll be happy. Just that new outfit and then I'll be happy.
Yeah.
I love what you're saying about integrating these experiences and how it really demands responsibility,
mm-hmm.
taking it into your own hands to integrate those vibrational shifts,
mm-hmm.
and also the courage that
mm-hmm.
it needs.
Mm-hmm.
It, that brings me back to my favorite card in the Osho deck. It's the courage
mm-hmm.
card, and it's the seed that's been so safe in its hard shell.
Mm-hmm.
For millennia and
mm-hmm.
eons, you know, it's totally ancient, but it's, you know, it gets planted in the soil and then it becomes this little sprout that's totally
mm-hmm.
vulnerable to the world
mm-hmm.
and the wind and the elements, and against all odds, it grows towards
the
light.
Yes.
And it opens into this beautiful flower, but
yeah.
only if you're willing to accept the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one of the other things that this reminds me of is this quote that I read the other day, and I don't know it exactly off by heart, but it's, you know, we do yoga. Yoga doesn't make life better. It makes us better at life.
Yes.
You know? Yeah,
because it gives us those skills of the non-attachment and the sensations, tuning into sensations, unpleasant sensations. We either are always running away from the aversion to it,
yeah,
and then the grasping and the running towards what's good, you know. That's the whole Buddhist philosophy of, you know, and I spend so much time in nature, and I was thinking that this morning, like, I'm super excited about going back to Sri Lanka because I get to go visit all my, like, old ancient trees that I go climbing up in the rocks and by myself with just me and the monkeys, you know, and I'm, like, on this landscape out in the middle of nowhere, just these rocks.
So
and
beautiful.
It's incredibly beautiful. And just thinking that all of the great masters, not one of them woke up inside a box, you know. They all woke up out in nature. They did their vision quests out in nature, you know. Muhammad out in the Sinai. It's like the Sinai is like you've landed on another planet out there, you know, in the desert and these rocks, and it's like so incredible to sit, you know, you feel the power of the universe when you're sitting out in places like that.
Yeah.
Buddha sitting underneath a giant Bodhi tree, you know, these giant trees are thousands and thousands of years old. They have an intelligence in them that's constantly communicating to us. So, you know, all that, what the wisdom of the indigenous people was that they stayed in harmony, and their ceremonies and everything they used was to keep this monkey mind, this human consciousness, because they understood the nature of human beings for us to go off track.
Yeah.
And so now what we've created is a whole society that doesn't have anything to help us to keep on track. It's just got a gazillion million options to keep us off of track. So we have to be even more vigilant with our third chakra, with Manipura, our own inner fire, to use that courage and that will to break through all the things that are so addictive, you know, because addiction is what the agenda that's being pushed at the moment. And, you know, I realized when I was in Africa and, you know, they had introduced sugar before they only had honey. So you weren't going to get these Africans to pay money, you know, good money for this white powdery stuff. So they sold it to them like super cheap for these, you know, big, huge sacks of white sugar, knowing that once they were addicted, that even a poor man, now like one sack is the same price. Before, when they were selling it, when they first introduced it, was like 25, the equivalent of about $25 a sack. You know, it's like a ton of white sugar. And then once they were addicted, that same sack is now worth a man's salary for the year. And somehow that poor man, before feeding his children or feeding his family, will find the money to buy that bag of white sugar because the addiction is driving his will. And so that's how our root chakra. So once we have these philosophies of yoga and we understand like what's going on with the deeper, you know, principles in our own body, and we can see outside ourselves to what the agenda is, then we truly have the free choice. Because when you are addicted to a substance, you don't have free choice. The substance is driving you, and you're being driven. Your behavior is being driven by the addiction. So, you know, that's where we then have to, like, empower ourselves. True empowerment, true freedom is when we really do realize, oh, we have free choice. So living in our democracy, which is actually a mockery, you know, mockery, and, it, you know, they've realized that a human being needs to see so many bits of information before they act on it. So, you know, we think that, you know, oh, I'm free, I'm going to go buy the new, you know, iPhone 10, you know, because I want it, you know, but you don't realize that some other agenda has planted that seed, you know, so many times on a bus, on a train, on a billboard, on a wall, on a here and there, that you've seen it so many times that then you take action.
Yeah.
And this is what marketing, you know, is all about. They've studied it, not to better humankind, but to control and manipulate us. So we need to take our power back by going, okay, that's what's happening. Like, at least in a, you know, in a communist society, at least there's like the dictator says, you know, you do this or we kill you, you know. It's like it's pretty plain forward. But when there's this like sneaky agenda of like, oh, you have total freedom, you know, have another McDonald's, go have another Coca-Cola, you know, when they're full of all these addictive chemicals, and you don't realize it, and then before you know it, you're addicted to something, and you think that you're free choosing, but you're actually not. So
wow.
So that's another reason why when you step out of your everyday, you know, we're creatures of habit. When you step out of your everyday habits and you come and you do a retreat, you eat healthy food, you move your body in new ways that you've, you know, wondrous ways that you've never discovered before, the channels, the nadis in the side of the body start to open and clear, and you can start to think clearly so you can get in touch with this deeper aspect of yourself of free choice.
Beautiful, Malaika. I know that you've got to go, so I'm going to ask you one last question. What does it mean for you to be in pure flow? Or what does pure flow mean to you?
Pure flow is when I am surrendered to a current of energy that is running through this entire earth and universe. And when I align myself to that current, and I don't always necessarily know what's going to happen, but I'm in a state of trust and I'm in a state of excitement, and it feels ease and graceful and synchronistic and creative and fun. That's when I know that I'm in my pure flow.
Beautiful. And we could talk about that for hours and hours, but I know that you've got to go catch your flight to Sri Lanka now.
Yes, otherwise I'll be flowing.
So thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with me today. I find you just so fascinating and illuminating and loving and open and connected. Can you please tell our listeners, how can we find you?
So my website is called www.inmyelements, with an S on the end, five of them.
I'll have it in the show notes.
www.inmyelements.com. And there I have my retreat. I have a retreat coming up in April called Rise, which is going to be yoga, dance, story. So we, you know, dance our stories and also have illuminating stories with John DeCatt, famous musician, playing live music and telling stories. It comes back to this thing of, you know, when in the old times you would say to the shaman, you know, if you were depressed and you came to a shaman or you had a problem and you came, he'd say, when was the last time you danced? When was the last time you sang? When was the last time you were enthralled by the mystery of story? And, you know, so these are ancient traditions that they help us to find ourselves again and connect. So that retreat's happening in April. It's right on the ocean, so we have lots of elemental connection, lots of play in the pool, in the water, and all meals and accommodation, everything included, and beautiful, beautiful flower of life in every room to help to activate the flower of life within the heart. And then I have Elemental Awakening Retreat happening in April as well, which is the prerequisite for my teacher training, but it's also a fantastic standalone retreat, and each day we embody a different element, and I really take people through their shadow work to bring them out the other side. And then right after that is my teacher training in May, starts on May the 2nd, and it's only open for 18 people, and it's filling up pretty quickly. And this is to become a facilitator in the work in the way that I facilitate and to help people. And really, it's more, I take that back, it's not the way I facilitate. I share all of my wisdom and gifts, and I try and pull out of people their wisdom and their gifts and give them this map. And then what I want is that for them to find their flow with how, if they're going to work with children, if they're going to work with adults, if they're going to work with disabled people, if they're going to work with only women, and help them to form their body of work using dance as the tool and the modality to, it all does the same thing. It's like all religions lead to the same temple inside, you know, once you're inside, all paths lead to the same place. But it's through this work, is the tools are dance, breath work, contact dance, yoga, connection, and shamanic ceremonies, and deep connection to the elements. So if that draws you or interests you and you're curious, then hit me up and we'll start a conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank again, Malaika, too. And have a beautiful retreat.
Mwah. Love you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. We are so grateful to have you here. Please feel free to comment, like, share, or ask us any questions about this episode or anything else. We'd love to welcome you here in Paradise and are offering retreats and teacher trainings year-round. So check us out, www.pureflow.yoga, or anywhere where you can be social, because we're there too. So have a beautiful day and hope to see you on the path.